CliffCentral.com.
All right. It is a Monday morning. It is the 27th of June.
27.
All right, so we got lots to do, people to see, places to go. Are you still in the dark, or have you come out of the load shed?
No, it's just come back on.
Oh, hooray.
I'm turning off all the torches. I've got the gas heater going. The cat's defrosting. They're sitting in line in a row. It has to be one at a time. So the third one's in now.
This is what we do. This is what we have to do. This is our lives. It's ridiculous. And all of this, this is not because the power plants have failed. This is because the staff are now on strike. You know, it never ends. I really just think, Eskom, we should just shut the whole thing down and start again. Really. It doesn't seem like there's a sensible way out. Anyway, we mentioned during the break, Collectomania. And Collectomania returns today, brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. And we're going to be joined by Zaid Motala, who has books, comic books, action figures, Funko Pops, a whole eclectic collection. We want to hear from you. If you know somebody who has a really cool collection, please let us know about it. We want to find the best collectors in South Africa, maybe even in the world. I know Dari's busy working on a couple of interesting guests from all over the world who've actually built museums around their collections. And not, by the way, not the most obvious collections and not the most obvious things to make museums out of. There's a place called the Poozeum, which is an actual institution that collects different kinds of poo from all over the world, from different animals, from different places, from different creatures. And they've established the Poozeum. So believe me, there is an endless list of things that you could learn on Collectomania. And we will be giving you an insight into some of that a little later on today. Let us know what's on your mind. Let us know what's on your agenda for this morning and for the rest of this week. If you did something fun over the weekend that you want to tell us about, do that too. We want to hear from you. All right. So a couple of interesting things going on in the comments. Obviously, there are people having infighting. There's always that. But there's still people talking about Cyril. There's still people talking about abortion in the United States, which is such a big deal. Somebody says, Leanne mentioned to Dr. Hanan that when wearing masks, his serial killer clients might be smiling under the masks while they've murdered cats. That would be scary. I don't think Dr. Hanan prides himself on having serial killers for clients, but nonetheless, an interesting discussion. And I don't know if it's not easy for me to just ignore someone who's wearing a mask. I said earlier that I really don't think it's any of our business if people continue to wear them and they think it's important that they wear them. I can't help going like, oh, what an idiot when I see someone wearing a mask now, because I'm like, what is it doing? It's doing nothing for you. It's been proven to do nothing. Even the health authorities say that. Bailey says, I've been hardly wearing a mask this year, and kids in schools really don't have a choice and have had to wear them every day for almost 3 years. Well, I think that's cruel. That's a kind of cruelty that I just really don't have time for. I don't mind if adults are allowing themselves to be stupid. But the minute you force kids to do that, I don't know. I think that's horrible. Bailey also says there's a vagina museum in the UK. Now, that would be interesting. A collection of vaginas? There could be some ethical questions around that, but okay. And then Kutle bringing up the other side. Are you getting the penis guy, the guy who collects penises? I think it was Jasmine Mulholland who told us about the penis museum in Iceland. So yeah, we're trying with a whole lot of these people. It would be very, very cool to to get some, you know, interesting collections from people all over the world, but especially the ones who've made collections that are so interesting that they now are museums. We want to hear all about that. So we've seen over the last while that one of the ways for a company in South Africa, insurance companies have been very good at this, to make themselves more likable, to get themselves a little bit of an extra bit of marketing angle, is to fill potholes, which is something that's been going on. So apparently, you can expect more branded pothole repairs with private companies making their mark on Johannesburg's roads. I have no problem with this. If you are an insurance company and you have a purple logo and you fill the pothole with purple colored tar, I'm all for it. I think that's great. You can even put your brand name across it because it means that you've done something to improve our lives. And I don't think anyone would have a problem with that. And that's true, right, Leanne? They're actually starting to become more and more of a sight on Joburg's roads as more companies, not just the ones who've been doing it up to now, but more of them are jumping on this bandwagon. Good. This is something seriously good. Why would anyone have a problem with this?
I was wondering how they were doing it and if it was legal or, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if these companies just said, no one's going to catch us. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
You know, what can they say? Stop repairing our roads.
Right.
But it's actually an agreement. I didn't realize that. It's through a private-public partnership. So at the moment, there are still just the two major insurance companies, and they've repaired more than 100,000 potholes.
Who are they? Because they deserve credit. So far. Who are the two companies?
Discovery and Dial Direct.
Awesome. Much love to both of you.
And they've come together with an app called Pothole Patrol, where you can report potholes. And I've seen it in my own road, which is certainly not a main road. They come within a few weeks and it's done. So I think it's amazing. So, yes, there is there's a whole lot more companies which are now going to be opened in terms of communications with transportation officials to open up more partnerships to help fix potholes, which is amazing.
Well, lovely lady Lee points out here, insurers are smart. They're actually looking out for their own pockets by filling up the potholes, because obviously you have to pay out big insurance claims for people whose tires and wheels have gone, who've done irreparable damage to their cars because of this. Sure, but that is good business. That's sensible. Someone's going to fix them. Nobody's driving around their car going, oh, I hope I hit a pothole so I can get a new tire. That's an inconvenience no one wants, right? I mean, it is a win-win.
Well, it's looking ahead. It's looking, you know, it's looking into the future. These companies are saying, we're going to be forking out more money. Mm-hmm. Unlike with the abortion issue in the US, are they thinking about how many children can't be paid for? Are they willing to pay for these children that are now born that don't, you know, have parents or money to look after them?
You know, I've always said that there should be a tax rebate for people who don't have kids. If you've willingly decided you're not going to have children and I'm paying for public education of other people's kids and I'm paying for social welfare for other people's kids, I should get a tax rebate. If you're a single person or you're a married couple and you've decided not to have kids, the government should give you like a 15-20% reduction on your overall tax, because they should say, well, this person is not actually burdening the system with another person, so here's a rebate. I mean, is that not at least something we could talk about?
An anti-dole.
Yeah. Like first of all right, so if you are not on social welfare yourself, obviously you wouldn't be taxed if you were, because you'd be below the, you know, the tax threshold. But those are the people who then should be looked at, and the government should go, well, okay, this person has decided not to have kids, or they can't have kids or whatever. We can give them a little reduction there. They're paying for all these other people's kids. So I think that there's an argument, like a good, sensible, moral argument, that there should be less payment there. But of course, if we're going to do that, then let's just go back to the potholes for a second. Shouldn't...
or the electricity.
Or the electricity. Shouldn't you get a rebate too? if the insurance companies are taking care of the roads, then we shouldn't have to pay the government tax to look after the roads. There are some roads in this country that are a disaster. They've done nothing for them. I saw Fikile Mbalula over the weekend. He was tweeting or Instagramming, I think it was, up a storm about like roads in Potchefstroom, I think, and saying how he's going to fix them. Well, okay, fix them. But if the insurance companies are fixing them, we shouldn't have to pay you tax money, and you shouldn't be paid as a Minister of Transport. Just saying. Isn't there something in the Constitution, says Ruth, protecting the citizen against improper service delivery? Well, that's all theory. Try and actually enforce it. Let's see how it goes for you. What if you have unclaimed kids out there that you don't know about, Gareth, says lovely Lady Lee. Well, that's why Father's Day is so tough. You know, two Sundays ago, I switched my phone off until at least the Monday morning. Just in case.
There is that one child that they found via the Sun newspaper, wasn't it?
Mm. Yeah, no, that was a bullshit story.
That illegitimate child of yours.
Yeah, they had to apologize because they hadn't even the journalist, in inverted commas, in that story was so hilarious. The journalist hadn't even attempted to get hold of me to like corroborate the story. Had I ever met this person who was claiming to be? Anyway, it's hilarious. I've still got the newspaper, and it's something funny. I'll keep for the rest of my life. Show people if I feel like making them laugh. Anyway, single people should pay more for not producing more taxpayers, says Durban Dope.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. We should all pay our tax into Outer's bank account for 2 months, and then we can negotiate with government. Now, that's an interesting idea. I wonder if Outer, next time we have Wayne Duvenage on, I'm going to ask him about that. I'm going to say to him, hey, Wayne, how about we establish an account we can all pay our tax into, and we don't give it to the government until they can prove that they deserve it. I mean, that would be phenomenal. That would really put the fear of God into them.
Yeah.
Vernon says, we went to Pararinha this weekend, wonderful Portuguese restaurant in Rosettenville. Such an odd spot considering the area, but recommended. Funny, I went there in January for a birthday party of a friend of mine. And the food really is good. And it's an institution. I mean, it's got ties on the roof from all the people over the years who've come to eat there. And it's got real character. But my God, it's in like the most rundown, awful neighborhood you could possibly imagine. Like Rosettenville is really, really shit. I wouldn't go there again for the neighborhood. I can promise you that.
It's got really bad over the past. It's got really bad over like the past 20 years, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
Before it was kind of okay, but now it's just gone.
Yeah. I mean, maybe part of the character is that it's always stayed in the same place, this restaurant. And I think that, you know, you could, in fact, the building that it's in was a police station, apparently, because the room that we were eating in was one of the holding cells for. Well, two of the holding cells that they'd smushed together and broken the wall down in between them. I mean, it's got character. It's got history, right? It's got a story attached to it, which is quite cool. But to go all that way.
I remember going there for a meeting. I was dragged along. I was only, I think, 14 or 15 at the time.
Mm.
And I was dating someone whose older brother was involved in counterfeit money. And we happened to be spending the day with him, and went along to this meeting. And it's only now, when I think back of what they were talking about, that they were talking about counterfeit money. And it was like this little mafia corner that we sat in, not with the restaurant owners, of course, but with somebody else. But that was interesting. And then about 2 weeks later, my boyfriend and I were sitting at the table with his parents. The older brother was not there. And there was a knock at the door. The police barged in and arrested the parents right in front of us, pinned them against the wall, their hands up.
This is what happens in the South, hey?
Obviously, my boyfriend's brother had given them money, not knowing that it was counterfeit money. Shit. And they were bust for spending it.
Oh, wow.
Good times.
Good times, Leanne, you and your criminal ex-boyfriend's family. Mm. Yeah, that's great. there's an interesting story in the news. The Qatar World Cup is on its way in 2022. They've moved it further towards the end of the year because it's too hot now for Qatar to be hosting the World Cup at the normal time. Normally, we'd go into the World Cup in the month of July and August. They've moved it closer to the end of the year. But Qatar have also banned casual sex during the 2022 World Cup. Now, do you remember how well prostitutes did in South Africa during the World Cup? Remember in 2010 here in South Africa? Yes. It was a big thing.
Yes.
We interviewed people about it on the show. It was a booming business. There were lots and lots of people who were lining up to make tons of cash from prostitution and sex and, you know, the general sex industry in South Africa in 2010 during the World Cup. And everybody was thrilled about it because it was like, oh, yeah, employment and money coming in and people spending money. And so Qatar has banned that. Of course, they're a very strict and conservative society in Qatar.
Not only that, but, you know, I remember during our World Cup, girls would get ready every single night to go out partying and end up, you know, with some hot football player. So, you know, without any money being exchanged, it was just for fun. And this is now Qatar have put their foot down, or Qatar have put their foot down and said anyone caught having sex outside of marriage will face jail for 7 years.
Well, that's going to really do wonders for tourism.
You've got to actually prove that you're married. You should be traveling not as an unmarried person. You should be traveling with some, you know, with your husband or your wife, especially if you're going to want to stay together at a hotel. Mm. And, you know, even showing affection between men and women, even if you are married in public, is an issue. And wearing revealing clothing is an issue.
Yeah.
Let's see what the football fan culture thinks about all of this.
You know, a place like Qatar is just not a place that's in league and in lockstep with the rest of the world. Part of being included in the world community, and this is where, you know, you can just tell FIFA are so corrupt that they're really after the money. And they just went for Qatar because Qatar obviously offered them a massive payday for the World Cup there. But it's wrong that because the rest of the world love football, we should all be forced to comply with Qatar's stupid rules for this World Cup and not have the fun. And I'm not saying everybody should be having like wild sex in the streets, but issues around alcohol sales, issues around partying, issues around booking hotel rooms, issues around prostitution. The rest of the world has moved far beyond the stage that Qatar's at the moment. But now we must all comply with their rules. Why? Because the FIFA decided they're going to host it there. It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, it's just you should not be included in the list of countries that can host the World Cup if you don't have a certain amount of liberal social rules, the kinds of rules that make it fun to be at a football tournament, the kind of rules that make it interesting and exciting to take part in the world's biggest sporting event. If you can't comply with those rules and your rules are different to them, then you shouldn't be allowed to host the thing. FIFA. This is FIFA's fault, not Qatar's fault.
Well, Qatar loses out as well by virtue of their laws. That a whole lot of alcohol sales, and I mean, they're not even allowing parties, so they lose out on a whole lot of money, a whole lot of people who won't actually travel. They'll rather watch from home and have parties at home.
Yeah, I mean, listen, a place like Qatar is such hypocrisy anyway, because they've been using essentially slave labor to build these stadia and to get themselves ready for this World Cup. I just don't feel like I want to support this. I know my lack of support's hardly going to make a dent on anything. No one's going to notice. They're going to go, oh, ooh, we better change our terrible ways because some idiot in South Africa who does a radio show is going to drop his support for it. I'm not excited about Qatar hosting this. I don't think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be a disaster. I think that they're a very backward bunch of people who run that place, and they make rules that the rest of us think are stupid. And you know what? I'm with the prostitutes on this one, Leanne. No anti-prostitution rules from Qatar, thank you very much. And you can't even have sex with, let's say you're in a relationship with someone, but you're not married to them. So let's say I took some girlfriend with me to Qatar, and we booked a hotel, and we were going to go watch a match or two. You're telling me that the vice police are going to bust into my hotel room and say, where is your marriage document? And I'm going to go, but I'm not married to her, she's just my girlfriend.
Well, you won't be able to book the room.
Yeah, that's right. So there we go. No interest. Sorry. Even if I had the money to travel to Qatar for this World Cup, not me. Count me out. Not interested.
Maybe you can say it to your sister.
Yeah, well, see, that's the irony, is they'd be okay with that. Oh, so you and your sister, huh? Yeah. That's fine in a place that's so backward. I don't get it at all. I remember, like, didn't we have sex workers on the show, and they were talking about, ooh, they're going to make a killing on Oxford Road, and they're going to all the hotels, and they're going to wait in the lobby for these footballers, and not even the footballers, but the football fans, right?
The fans
from all over the world. How exciting. Apparently, I don't know if this is true or not, but in Qatar, people who have sex out of marriage often get their sentence commuted to 18 years of house arrest. That's just as
like marriage.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's what I was going to say. F1 have also signed the same deal with Qatar. And then lovely Lady Lee, I think she's just teasing us here, but says Qatar is the future. Oh, really? How so? I would love to know. Mm-hmm. How is Qatar the future?
Yeah,
we need that law here full time for at least 7 years to balance things out. Be careful what you ask for. Carl says it's going to be the cuckest World Cup ever. I think I agree with him. The commercial aspect of sport is corrupt, says Ethan. Yeah. Ethan says that he thinks it's going to be amazing. It's all about the money. Well, maybe. I didn't even, you know, like the other day I suddenly realized, oh my God, it's a World Cup year. And normally I'd be waiting in anticipation. I'd be excited as can be about this. I haven't really been paying attention. Jared says, I've been in Doha Airport. I was there in August, and it was 31 degrees outside at 1 a.m. They already have strict alcohol rules. Mm-hmm. Kim Jong-un, all the way from North Korea, says, Viva prostitutes, viva. Of course he does. Yeah, that's great. Soccer players get paid way too much, in my opinion, out of the blue, says Stone Philosopher. And it's all about the money. I did not say that. Well, I can't be quoting you correctly all the time if you're commenting every 2 minutes. Sometimes going to get it wrong. And Rebellious Root says, pathetic to think that these diptards even still exist today in 2022. Yeah, I mean, listen, if you are a big fan of Qatar, then tell me why. I'd love to hear from you. Maybe you can help us with this. Because
I wonder if abortion's legal there.
No idea. Did I ask your opinion on that? I went on a bit of a tirade it wasn't a tirade. I think it was quite a sensible discussion between 6 and 6:30 and something everybody's talking about.
Yeah, I was
about.
Listening.
Okay, well, what did you think of that? And where is your position? I mean, you know, first of all, you are a woman, so I'd like to hear your thoughts on that from that point of view. But also, have you ever had a scare? Have you ever thought about what you would do in this situation if it was you?
I'm lucky enough not to have had a scare. I've never had an abortion. I have had to take the morning after pill, and it was after I was raped. And I was 13 years old. So I think if I had have fallen pregnant at that age with a rapist's child, there is
horrible.
No doubt in my mind that I would have had an abortion. And that for me, take that situation aside. In fact, I hadn't even thought of that, Gareth, until you said, have I had a near scare? Take that situation out of it completely. I know you mentioned that you're probably pro-choice. I'm highly pro-choice. And I know that every situation is different. And I certainly agree with you where you say it shouldn't be, a form of contraception. It shouldn't just be, because you haven't taken responsibility. But even if you are on contraception, there are women who have three children who will fall pregnant again very easily by mistake and know that they can't afford them. And for me, the biggest thing is the financial strain and what that's going to put onto the country as a whole. Put the rape aside and unwanted children in that aspect, as well as incest and, molestation and family issues like that. But when it comes to unwanted children in terms of paying for them, who's going to pay for them? Who's going to pay for their medical? They don't even have good medical.
Yeah, but then
it's 150 years back.
But I mean, if your primary motivation for making or breaking a rule is how much does it cost, pulls a whole lot of other questions into sharp focus. I mean, either you're killing someone or you're not. You know, these are the philosophical discussions that we have to have. And it's difficult. And that's what I was saying between 6 and 6.30. I was talking about how there aren't any black and white areas here. There's a lot of gray. It's not easy to figure this stuff out. But we can't just go around. I mean, by that rationale, if you're poor in South Africa and you're on social welfare, does it make it okay for us to kill you? You know? Just because we can't.
No, but it depends on what state social welfare is in.
Well, in this country, it's a disaster.
I mean, look at. Yeah, exactly. So then, you know, that's why.
We should go around and say to people,
abortion.
Show me your bank balance. And if your bank balance isn't over a certain amount, well, we need to take you out. Because that's kind of the.
I mean, there are plenty of other reasons. You know, a rich family. Take a rich family, for example. Let's say that they have a child already who has special needs, and they know that they're not going to be able to give their child all the attention it needs if they have another. And when I say rich, I mean people who are not going to end up putting their children in the foster system.
Yeah, but you understand.
There are a whole lot of different reasons.
You understand what I'm saying, though. If you take your...
What if I'm just a working businesswoman and I don't want children and I happen to be pregnant?
But then admit...
contraception failed.
So admit it's just that. So in that case, it would be a contraceptive. That would be what you're trying to do. You basically don't want kids, so you want the right to be able to not have kids, even if you've already fertilized.
No, but I've used contraception.
Okay, but it's happened.
I was using contraception failed.
But it's happened. So ultimately, in that case, it's just contraception. I just don't like the argument, and I'm not going at you on this because I'm really using it as an example of how this is not clear. It's not obvious, and it's not cut and dried. If you say, for example, that the best reason or one of the reasons that you should be able to have an abortion is because you can't afford to raise the child properly, then I'm saying to you, well, taken to its logical conclusion, that argument means that anyone who can't afford to do something should just be, you know, taken out, because that is the way that some people would think about it. If you just arbitrarily decide that, oh, well, if you can't afford a kid, then you have the right to just get rid of the kid. At what age does that stop being an argument? What, once it's 3? What if you suddenly become poor at the age the child's 5? are they going to take your child away and say to you, I'm sorry, you can't afford this kid anymore, so we'll just put this in the care of the state? They can't do that. You know what I mean.
Well, the thing is, we'll see the effects of the reversal of this law quite soon. I reckon in 5 to 10 years, we'll see the effects and we'll be able to see, you know, how it's played out.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's turn to happier and more interesting discussions, because I don't want us to go into the weeds too much on this thing, even though it's the biggest story in America right now. It's all anyone's talking about. And here in South Africa, there are lots of people talking about it too. What I want us to talk about is collectomania. And every Monday we talk collectomania. It's where we get someone who's got an interesting collection and we ask them to share their passion and their enthusiasm for that collection with us. And this morning is no different. It's brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. And again, it bears repeating that if you'd invested in gold or you'd invested in platinum or silver, you'd be in a better position now than if you'd invested in Bitcoin or in the stock market or in property. Just remember that, because it's quite an interesting thing to keep in the back of your mind. And if you're thinking it's time to invest in gold, then these are the people to talk to: the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. Let's talk to Zaid Motala, who's on the line. Hey, Zaid, how are you?
Hi, Gareth. How are you doing?
Nice to see you, dude. Now, first of all, I've got to compliment you on your Comic-Con hoodie that you're wearing. I didn't even know that this was something
Thank
that you...
Thank you so much.
I know. This is very cool. I didn't know that you were a big comic dude. And I mean, this is really, really cool. I just want to talk about that part of your collection before we get onto all the others, because you also collect action figures, Funko Pops, and we've had someone on with action figures and Funko Pops before. But comics are huge. This is an immense and enormous and a very influential market, and the people who collect comics are very serious collectors. So how did it all start for you?
Oh, man. I think we got to go all the way back to then. Sorry, one second.
No problem.
I'm speaking to the legend, Gareth Clift. I'm so nervous at the moment, you know.
Good to have you on.
I think it must have started somewhere in the 90s there. My parents would give me like 7 rand of allowance every month. Then you'd run on to the Checkers and get the cheapest thing you could find, which was these knockoff comics back then. And slowly but surely, as I got a little bit more than 7 rand a month, I was very fortunate to come across some local comic book stores here, and then the madness just took over, and now we are a few boxes of comics in, I would say.
So first of all, I mean, have you been to Comic-Con in the US, or have you been to the local one? Because we have a Comic-Con in South Africa. I don't think it's happened for the last 2 years, obviously. How big is that community?
Oh, it's massive. It's massive. So I haven't had the privilege of going to any of the ones in the US. It's on the cards, fingers crossed. And the one here in South Africa, I'm very, very fortunate to be a little bit involved with the organization of it. And I got to tell you, at our last show in 2019, actually, we saw about close on 8,000 people coming through over the weekend. And definitely hoping for similar numbers later this year in September. And I'm hoping we'll see you there. I mean, it's going to be massive. Yeah. You're going to love it.
And people dress up, right? And they come in like cosplay outfits, and it sounds really cool. So Dathron and Threads says Comic-Con this year is in September. It's going to be awesome. Is that right? It's in September. It's in Joburg.
That's correct. Yes, that's right. 22nd nice. To 25th of September at NASREC.
All right, so this is a very specialized and complicated area of collecting, because there are comics that I've seen news stories about that have been sold for millions of dollars, like original first editions that are still in the plastic that no one has ever actually paged through, because the more pristine they are, the more valuable they are. And then there are people who are just into the comics themselves. They like to read them. They like to look at them. They love the illustrations. It's the best way to learn to speak for some people, to learn to read for some people. I know people who don't read books, but they love comics. Are you serious about this, or is it just like a fun hobby?
Look, I would say that it varies depending on what's going on. So more often than not, I would like to say I'm fairly serious about it. But look, the second you lose sight of the fact that it's really supposed to be a form of entertainment and honestly escape in some ways, then you, to my humble mind, you're losing the plot a little bit. So I would say I'm somewhere in the middle of the spectrum.
Okay.
I'm definitely serious about speculating with some high-end books, but at the same time, I just genuinely love the stories and art, like you alluded to.
All right. So what made you take an interest in comics? Because you could easily have just gone with the action figures or the Funko Pops. What is it about comics that makes you happy and excited?
I think it's one of those things where it's an easy entry point. I mean, currently you're looking at about 50, 60 bucks to get your monthly fix. And the stories are always evolving. So what happens is you get a story arc. Once that's complete, there's usually a new creative team coming in, and then they take the story in a whole different direction. And just sort of having these different characters on these different journeys, and you are sort of in the passenger seat with them through that, it's really, really an amazing thing. I mean, imagine having a Marvel blockbuster running through your brain every 25 days, you know, in the form of a comic book. It's just a phenomenal experience to have. So for me, it's the longevity of the stories, the characters, and just the art form as a whole that really got me plugged in there.
Well, you mentioned like blockbusters. How many comics have become like these massive, massive successful movie franchises? I wonder if people like Stan Lee ever had any idea when they started their career that they would end up producing a slew of films that are now unassailable at the box office. It's like, you know, if you don't have a Marvel or a DC movie, you're just not going to make money at this stage anywhere in the world. These are the most successful movies in the world right now.
It's obscene to think. I think that way back in the when Stan Lee, for example, was creating Spider-Man, I read an interview some years back where he said that, look, at that point, they were just trying to compete in the market with what we now know as DC Comics. Mm. And over the years, just the cultural zeitgeist has become such that people are now looking for these larger-than-life characters, and that's the reason why people are plugging in. And it's so interesting and so exciting that you actually mentioned how many books have become, you know, these blockbusters, or rather the influence for some of these blockbusters, because at the moment, and if you don't mind, I'd love to share this with you.
Sure.
There's Thor, Love and Thunder, that's coming out in a couple of days' time. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years back, I lucked out and speculated on a certain Thor story.
Oh,
and
wow.
These comic books over here, a couple of these, have actually become the core of the Thor story. Sorry, that was a terrible line.
Just
apologize.
Just hold those up. Hold those up close to the camera. Let's just have a look at those. That looks great.
Yeah, sure. So there's this one over here, and there's this one over here.
Wow.
And there's this one over here. And there are a couple that I didn't go and take out of storage because I'm worried that my nerves over here could make me squash because, oh my God, this guy Cliff's going to be a little crazy. So you just leave those ones aside.
All right. So tell us quickly, because you've shown us those three Thor ones,
yes.
But how big is your collection at the moment? How many comics do you have?
Ooh, I hope my mom and wife are not watching, but close on about 10,000 now.
Wow.
So, you know, yeah. You might say things got a little out of hand somewhere along the way, but yeah.
It's amazing.
It's a madness. It's a disease, but it's the best kind.
What is your most valuable one? Can you tell us, or would you rather keep that secret?
No. I really would love for people to sort of have the same sort of love and passion I do. So I think in terms of monetary value, one of the ones I'm comfortable sharing is my first appearance of Ghost Rider. So you may recall a couple of years back, you know, a guy with the flame scarred motorbike, you know.
Right, yeah.
So I've got the first appearance of that character. But honestly, for me, there's also an emotional aspect in it. So I would have to say that, you know, monetary value aside, personal value would probably have to be this book. This is a copy of Batman number 50, and it's got art that I actually did. And at the last Comic-Con, I was able to get signed by all of the guests.
For me, this book here represents
a moment in time for me, because some of my favorite artists actually, you know, looked at my art, appraised it, gave me tips and pointers, and then each of them wrote a little message about it for me, you know. And it was just, you know, that's what Comic-Con is for me. That's what comic collecting is for me. And this year is just one of those.
So,
people throw
second.
Around the term grail very loosely.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
But this is cool. So you're also an artist. I mean, you draw your own. That's very cool.
I dabble.
That's not a small thing. That's very, very cool. All right. So I know Leanne's probably got some questions as well, but how do you store these comics? I mean, where do you keep them? Because you can't just put them on the shelf with a bunch of books that get bent or squeezed or you know, someone messes something on the shelf and then you suddenly have like a really valuable comic that's worth nothing because it's got a tea stain on it or something.
You know, funny story that actually happened to me once, and that was awkward, but you know, There's various ways. What's really awesome about comic book collecting here in South Africa is that when you go to the stores, they actually do you the favor of popping comic books into these bags and boards, you know, so that's like a very basic level of protection.
Okay.
Then you can upscale a little bit. Sorry, I'm going off on a tangent there. But, you know, you get these things they call top loaders, so you can pop them in, that stores them. This year is slabbing, so it's CGC, and this is where they encase the entire thing in sort of this plastic slab, so it's like really, really solid.
Wow.
And then, of course, you get special comic book boxes. You pop them in, and those go into storage. So that's sort of like the hierarchy and scale of things.
There's a whole world of just
But like that
storage.
One that you've just shown us with the entirely enclosed. Can you open that?
You could. You probably shouldn't, you know. But,
okay, so it's
these,
like you would need to use a pair of scissors.
Probably pliers and a hammer. But,
wow.
It's really, really, really solid. So, this style of doing things, if you have what they call a key comic book, so a book that's probably going to end up in value a bit or something that's really, you know, special to you, then it's probably worth getting it encapsulated like this, because what this does is it actually preserves the integrity of the book. It has a little acid sleeve in there, so even the ink and stuff, it doesn't cause the paper to deteriorate. So in terms of longevity, this is probably the way to go in terms of saving your books.
It's amazing.
But that does mean that you can't page through it and read it, right?
Yes, 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 yes. But fortunately now in 2022, that is, you find that it's really easy to get facsimile versions of books. So those are sort of cheaper reader versions. So if you really, really want to speculate in books, then it's probably wiser to keep your high-end valuable books in sort of a protective casing. Mm. And if you really wanted to read it, then you can get those easily at any of the local comic book stores. Yeah. So those are essentially reprints of, I'm going to say, those key books.
It's amazing. So they lose.
And so now,
go ahead, Leanne.
Comics only, or do you? Sorry, there's a bit of a delay because I'm using my hotspot on my phone. Mm-hmm. Do you use, read these comic books all the time? Not the ones, I'm talking about the subscriptions that you have every month. Mm-hmm. Is that all mm-hmm. you read, or do you read other sorts of literature?
Oh, no. I do read, for my day job, there's a lot, a fair amount of research and author that goes into it. So there's obviously a lot of reading there. I still read for leisure, and nowhere on the level of Gareth, obviously. I mean, I saw the video about his book collection. That is tough to aspire to, sir. That's tough to aspire to. One day when I'm a big boy, one day, But really, really speaking, reading, I think one of the many reasons why I go into comic books is, there was a slogan back in the 90s where comic book reading is reading too. And so, it was really a nice way to actually plug into, and Gareth alluded to this earlier, it's a way to actually get people to read, and I just sort of got stuck into it a couple of decades later.
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, it's like audio. I grew up listening to audio tapes, with the books, and that was so important in teaching me, the sound and the words as I'm reading them.
Yeah.
And that got me reading, physically reading, before I was even at school. And something awesome. Like comic books can do the same thing
absolutely.
For kids.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, when I ask if it's all you read, I think it's fantastic, and it's good that it's out there.
So Ethan says here, your most valuable comic has your own art plus so many incredible signatures. You are a legend. A lot of people here asking all kinds of questions,
too.
Thank
you so much,
Ethan. This is amazing. MM says, a friend of mine who's 72 died last year in a house full of comic books. Paramedics struggled to open the door. It is such a valuable and rare collection. If anyone is interested in Amsterdam. Oh, I'm pretty sure there'll be a lot of people who'd be interested now, MM. So, maybe send us an email. Yeah. Because there are people who'd pay a lot of money for that. Have you?
MM does add, though, interested in the collection, not the dead body.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Important distinction. Very important distinction.
That's great. Does exposure to light over time fade the comics?
It is possible, yes. So UV light actually does cause a little bit of bleaching. So what you actually get is, and I think there's actually a secondary market now just in terms of how to store your stuff. So you do get some, some protectors like this that actually have UV screening on it. And so that they actually prevents the UV light from bleaching it out. But yeah, it's probably wise not to have your stuff in direct sunlight. If I may be so bold, just behind me over here with my display stuff, on the screen doors on the side over there to the study, there is actually a UV filter over there just to block it. So,
you've
got to look after your
That's
stuff.
That's very impressive. It's very impressive. I mean, it's like some libraries. They have these rooms that are sealed off where, they control what the gases in the air are. And they also have no light, no natural light coming in. And very careful amounts of light that are introduced into the room in terms of the actual lights in the ceiling. So if you're serious about the stuff, you have to think about these things, right?
Indeed. The entire thing, it's so funny that there's an entire value chain that goes into the collecting and the storage and the protection. And now there's a whole debate in South Africa about, how do you go about insuring it? Because do you specify each item, or do you just, technically you can't call it household contents, even though it is content. But that's an ongoing debate with the guys from one of the insurance companies. But this is the beauty of it. And what I love about any sort of collecting is that, when you really plug into it, it actually adds so many different layers. It's so nuanced. It's such a wonderful thing to have a means of escaping, or rather accentuating the human experience, just so long as it doesn't go all kinds of,
crazy.
creepy there where you lose the plot. You know, you got to watch out for that. So this is very, very fine line.
Something we have to ask you because it comes up with a lot of our collectors. You mentioned you got a wife and a family. Now, do they give you trouble about your collecting? Because your collecting could become a bit of an obsession. And I see you have this beautiful room with all your display cabinets and things there. How far have you gone down the rabbit hole of becoming a wacky nutcase collector, and have your family complained?
No. Fortunately, you know, at any given point in time, my mom is around to have that intervention that say, this is an intervention, no more toys, you know? No, but I just. I think that, you know, the problem with any sort of collecting, you know, you can't lose sight of the fact that, look, this is one aspect of your life. It shouldn't supplant, like I said, the whole human experience. So in our household, my wife and I, we discuss these things. We have a budget. We look at these things. And, you know, what I find is there's never going to be a day, you know, where I'm going to be there. Okay, no, listen, honey, we cannot go out for supper because I need to buy the new issue of Harley Quinn, for example. You know, it's about having a balance. It's about, you know, saying to yourself, this is what we do. This is how we do it. And you got a plan. You know, you got a plan. So,
and Zaid,
I
mean,
I haven't lost the plot quite yet.
Isn't it also true that some of these have been very good investments for you? You may have actually made more money. We were joking earlier about how people who bought Bitcoin and who were buying stocks a year ago thought they were in a good position, and actually it ended up
NFTs.
It ended up being good to buy gold instead. Are there comics there that you know have improved in value that were a really good investment?
Yes, without a doubt. If you would permit me, can I show you one? Because I wanted to talk about it, but that's okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, 100%. Yeah. So this is a comic now. It's Originals. Let's get this angle right. Original Sin, issue number 4, Amazing Spider-Man. So this was a miniseries some years back. And in this book, they introduce a new character called Silk in the Spider-Man universe. Uh-huh. And now what we're seeing, there's a lot of apps and you can check on eBay. What we're seeing is this book is actually trending up in value a fair amount because there's going to be a series that's coming out soon. So what we've seen in recent years is because of the movies, because of the series and everything we're seeing in, you know, popular media generally, like you said earlier, a lot of these stories influence these things. So you find that when an announcement is made, these things start blowing up in value. I'm not sure if you've gotten Disney Plus, but there's a series there called Miss Marvel. And I was very fortunate to get two copies of her first appearance a little while back. And now I'm just watching that trend and I'm like, okay. and again, you know, I hope my wife is not watching at this exact moment because between us and about the couple of many, many people that watch this, I just. What you find now is that's always my justification. I'm like, no, love, you see, this thing over here, if you spend $100 on it now and we buy 10, a little way down the line, it's going to be worth more. Look at this one. And she's like, nope, not buying any of that. Nope. Come on. And that's why. But yeah. it has been really good for me and a lot of my peers, my friends. And look, it's just a wonderful, the value aside, and you'll forgive me, but the value, monetary value aside, it's really awesome to have a hobby that on a monthly basis, the expenditure isn't that much, relatively speaking. It gives you entertainment. It's, you know, it's, and then there's a side effect that it may actually go up in value later. So I would say love comic books, love the things you collect for. The fact that you love it, and not necessarily because it may go up in value, because that's the easy way.
Otherwise you would be just a gambler, a speculator. You know, you're just looking for anything that would go up in value.
Yes.
This is much more about the passion that you have for this. So first of all, Dathron and Threads wants to know, are you an exhibitor this year or just visiting Comic-Con?
No, like I said, I'm very fortunate to be assisting with the organization of the show. So I'll actually be hosting a couple of panels and some fan events. But I'll definitely be there.
And this is a good point, too, made by Corona's Boring. Every time someone spills tea on a rare comic, the others all gain value. That's true, right? Because then there's one
very
less.
True.
There's one
very
less
true.
In circulation. So how do they work these? Because comics can be printed. So you would think, why don't they just print 100,000 of every comic and then None of them will have value. Do they have limited editions that have a very limited run, for example? So they'll only print like 10,000 or 1,000 or whatever. And that's what makes them valuable.
Okay. Yes. So what you found is, okay, so, and you'll forgive me because I don't want to sound too exclusionary when I explain this, but it's something that I feel would help people if they understood. So
sure.
Essentially, what you find is a lot of value comes in the older comic books. So there's different periods. So there's the golden era, silver era, bronze era. We're currently in the modern era of comic books now.
Okay.
And what you find is that the golden era, silver era, and bronze era, those books, because now comic books back in those days, it wasn't really something that where people were going to buy it and then, you know, keep it in a slab and all of that. It was literally something you bought, you read, and you probably lined your birdcage with it, that kind of thing. So because there are fewer of them, horror stories, my friends, right? Because there are fewer of those, there's scarcity, supply and demand, and simple sure. economics. So there's fewer of them in existence, therefore those are worth more. Nowadays, what you're finding is a lot of value comes from the first appearances, the so-called key issues, shall I say. And what happens there is the speculative market works such that people figure, okay, this is going to be coming up, we're probably going to see something, let me go buy that. Now, the comic book companies, how they print these out is they have interest lists and you can pre-order them. So based on the pre-orders they get in some cases and the minimum orders that they generally have for certain titles, that sort of averages out. So you would do a lot better if you wanted to invest in comics. You would do a lot better if you could save up some and then look for the older era books, because there's definitely few of them in existence. And if you want to buy modern books purely for the speculative element of it, and I don't think anyone should do that, enjoy the stuff, then you should look for more of those key appearances and stuff like that.
Just quickly, what's the golden era, what's the silver era, and what's the bronze era? I don't know anything about this. That sounds amazing.
Okay, 100%. So it's basically, I made some notes here.
That's
so,
good.
Because these are dates. So the golden era, it's from about 1938 to 1956. So if you think about it, when Superman first popped around, that started the golden era of comics. It is so incredibly difficult to find these books. Those are those books that are selling for the millions of dollars, It is insane. Then you get the silver era of books, which is from about 1956 to 1970. Right. Then you get the bronze era of books, which is 1970 to 1985. So a lot of my higher value books are from the bronze era also. You know, you can still sort of afford them, sort of, you know.
What's the most expensive
modern era of books?
Is the golden era the most expensive? Are those comics worth just way more than the rest? So what's the most expensive one you've actually ever held in your hands?
Oof. Yeah, okay. So fortunately with Comic-Con, there have been a couple that, so I'm just trying to, in my mind, just sift through the values of there. But I would think that the first appearance of Wolverine, if I'm not mistaken. No. It was definitely the first appearance of Hulk. I'm sorry, so I'm embarrassing myself.
There's so many amazing
ones I saw at the show. So it's the brain is sort of backfiring now. But that's the beauty of, you know, in this current day and age, you know, it's exposure to these things. It's so much easier now because people understand, okay, listen, there are millions of people who actually love and enjoy this lifestyle, this hobby, and therefore exposure is slightly better. So, yeah.
Wow.
Okay. I'm still stuck on that one. I'm still stuck on that one.
but this is so cool. I mean, the fact that this stuff has become like, and now that you can get together with a community of people who are also into this and you talk about Comic-Con, I mean, it's huge. This is a really, really big deal. I think it's fascinating to get into the origins of all of this, to see people get passionate about their collections. It's just great to hear you talk about it too, because honestly, Zaid, anyone who's a fanatic, a collector, I just love the passion, man.
Thank you, sir. That means the world to me. And you know what? The series that you're currently doing now, I got to say, I'm simply loving it because, you know, to see that there are other people down other walks of life who are as plugged in and invested into something they love it. That it's just a wonderful, wonderful thing to witness and behold. So thank you, sir. Mm. Thank you, sir.
Well, listen, thank you for sharing your collection with us. Sure. And I hope we get to see you again. Someone here just said Zaid was the MC for the Brother Cosplay event a couple of weeks ago. Great entertainment. Yeah. So the people from your own cosplay community and the Comic Con community all coming through here. We will probably have to talk to you about your action figures and Funko Pops at some point too. But for today, comics all over the place. And thank you so much, Zaid. It's nice to talk to you.
You as well, awesome. Sir. Thank you very much. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. There it is, Zaid Mutalla and his unbelievable collection of comics. So if you have an interesting collection or you know someone who does, let us know about it, please. Contact@cliffcentral.com. And of course, Collectomania is brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. You heard Zaid saying it's so cool to have people talk about their collections. We can all, even if we collect different things, share in that excitement and enthusiasm that we all have for this.
No toenails, please.
No toenail clippings, but everything else. You missed it because your internet cut out, but the Poozeum may be a feature on the Collectomania episode coming up soon. The Poo Museum, which they call the Poozeum. So all of that still stuff you have to look forward to. Have an excellent Monday, everybody. We will see you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Cheers. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.